Hi there, my name is Mary Killalea. Welcome to the To Be Bolder podcast, providing career insights for the next generation of women in business and tech. To Be Bolder was created out of my love for technology and marketing, my desire to bring together like-minded women, and my hope to be a great role model and source of inspiration for my two girls and other young women like you. Encouraging you guys to show up and to be bolder and to know that anything you guys dream of, it's totally possible. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation. Hi there. Today we are talking with two bold and hardworking, career-driven women, and I'm so excited to have these ladies on the show. Each of these women have built successful careers doing what they love. Today, while still maintaining their own passion and projects, they are co-owners of Mancini Duffy, a national design firm with a 100-plus-year-old history and tech-forward approach specializing in architecture, planning, and interior design. In addition to being co-owner, Bolanlay Williams Ole is the CFO of Mancini Duffy and founder of She Builds Lives, She Builds Money, She Builds Waves, and Reach Nigeria, and best-selling author of Build Boldly, Chart Your Unique Career Path and Lead with Courage. Right alongside her is Mancini Design Principal, Jessica Manamato, who was previously president of the International Interior Design Association. With over 20 years of client-focused design experience, she oversees workplace strategy, space planning, and interior design for the firm, infusing technology into all facets of her design process. I love having you both on. Thank you for supporting career-minded women and sharing your stories today.
Thank you for having us.
Okay, so let's just dive in. Your company sounds amazing. I can't believe you get to do this for fun. I mean, actually fun for work. So tell us about Mancini Duffy and how it's unique.
Once again, thank you so much for having us. We're really excited to have this conversation and just, you know, connect with your listeners. So Mancini, as you had said in your introduction, you did us justice. We're 100-plus-year-old architect and interior design firm based in New York City. For me, I have been at Mancini now 5 years. Jessica followed shortly after I did. And I think one of the things that makes us unique, one, is our approach to design. You had highlighted our tech-forward focus. We do a lot of things with technology here in terms of thinking about our design process. How do we push things forward using technology? How do we also just change the profession, right? And how we're delivering our projects to our clients. So Jessica could talk a little bit more about that. But the other thing that makes us also unique is our entrepreneurial spirit. And what I mean by that is, you know, every single employee or folks on our team who work here essentially can define their own career path here, right? So if there's something that you're interested in, leadership here is 100% behind you, you know, in terms of pursuing the path that you want to see happen. How do you connect within the company? How do we support you outside of the company? And so people are, you know, are finding maybe like a leadership opportunity that they want to explore outside of like doing interior design. And so they're able to craft their unique career path here at Mancini.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I think in addition to what Bola touched on, the way that we have crafted our design process, it's an immersive process and it's very team driven. So not only is our entire team involved on our side, but we really team and partner with our clients so that from start to finish throughout our process, they are really an integral part of our team. You know, it's not a strict sort of process where we present to them, they give feedback. It's an iterative process where we are true team members together. And we feel like that creates the best design outcome.
That's awesome. So I also read that the firm is 60% female, nearly twice the norm of architecture and design industry, which I applaud you for that. That is awesome. Why is this so important to you, each of you, but also to Mancini's customers?
Yeah, I'll start with that. I think, you know, number one, I'm extremely proud of that. Mm-hmm. I think that it's important for women to raise each other up in all situations. I think that it has helped us to really establish a level playing field for women, something that I didn't have for a vast majority of my career. And I feel like, you know, in a lot of rooms that I was in, I did not have that. But I definitely feel like I have that now in the last, say, 5 to 10 years. a lot of that has to do with this culture that we've created at Mancini, and that we're always, you know, striving for equity and diversity and equality of women in every room. In addition to that, we have a lot of women clients and women on our client teams. And I think that through that equity in the room, that we have really encouraged this true sense of collaboration. And as I said before, that really makes for a much better project every single time. And lastly, I think it creates a great mentoring atmosphere. You know, I didn't have a lot of that, as I said, in the room as I was growing up in the industry. But now for younger women entering the industry, that informal mentoring of just watching situations happen in front of you creates a great professional development opportunity for them.
And that's fantastic. Milane, do you have anything to share?
Yeah, so I mean, everything that Jessica said is 100%, you know, my philosophy and what I believe in, similar to Jessica's experience coming up, I felt like coming up in my career, I felt like a lot of the women that I saw, one, I didn't see that many, two, they felt so far up, like you couldn't reach them. And so now, you know, being in a leadership position and, you know, part of the owners here at Mancini, essentially, it's like, what kind of firm do we want to run? Is it one that values diversity in ideas, diversity in the things that come up on our projects, just different perspective and different views in terms of how we are solving problems here, in terms of how we're making, you know, the profession a bit more equitable. And so for me, it's a joy, like I said, to see that. And it's not just about, you know, making space for women on the table and not giving them the opportunity for their voice to be heard, but they can actually share their opinions and it matters and we take it and we run with it and make changes, right? So essentially I'm saying, don't just create a space or like a token seat for a woman, but actually like lean into their skill sets, actually hear their perspective and actually act on it. And then I bet you begin to see things change in your firm. We have for sure, right? Even down, aside being just women, even when you think about mothers, Jessica and I are mothers. So we're able to advocate for the mothers on the floor when it comes to parental leave, you know, for both men and women. But like these things are important, especially as we've seen, you know, with the pandemic and the amount of women who have left the industry. Across industries, those numbers are staggering. And so as organizational leaders, you have to be thinking about, like, look at your floor and look at your policies and decide, like, how are you making policies that help women get back to work? And so that's my own perspective when it comes to how I feel about what we're doing here.
Well, and I love it so much because, you know, in picking guests for the show, I look for women who are about women empowerment and positive empowerment. And you guys both, you ladies both exemplify that. And the fact that you're on here together, you know, sitting side by side and helping, you know, more women out there just says so much about both of you and your company. Milane, let's talk about your career path, like kind of the way you worked your way up and how you got to be where you are today.
Yeah, so very non-traditional. I will make this really a bridge. but I studied mathematics in college, in Hunter College. I actually am from Nigeria originally, moved here wanting to do computer engineering, ended up not doing that. And in my first semester, I took physics. It was horrible. So I called my mother, who was many thousand miles away, and said, listen, I have this. I'm really strong in math. I had my whole spiel. But even with that, I didn't know what I was going to do when I would graduate. I wasn't sure if I was going to, you know, what essentially career path I would take. I wasn't sure. But I just knew then that this was a decision I had to make. And perchance, well, now it's no longer coincidence. It's the way the stars aligned for me. I happened to find a job listing for a junior project accountant as an architecture firm. I had taken technical drawing in high school, which was my only connection to the industry, and so I said, oh, it'll be interesting to work here. Ended up applying, and I got the job because the person interviewing me also studied math, right? So we connected on other things outside of the job, right? When you're coming in entry level like that, you just have to be willing to learn. Yes, you can communicate the value of your degree and what you can bring to the table, but a lot of it is training ground, right? It's you're coming in to learn. And I truly believe that he hired me for my character, right? I believe that you hire for character. Skills can be learned along the way. It comes with experience. And so spent 5 years there. And then I was like, well, if I'm going to stay in this industry, I need to see how accounting and finance is done. So I switched companies, spent another 5 years there, and ended up getting a phone call about 5 years ago asking if I would want to come run a finance team at an architecture firm. And I said, well, you know, like I've only done things from a project level. I don't know about this firm-wide level. But the person on the other line ended up being Christian Giordano, who's our president here. And, you know, we talked through, we went and had a really nice lunch, talked through all my different like concerns. Essentially, I was set up for success, right? I'm an A player. I always say that. You have to know what kind of player you are. I'm an A player, and I needed to know what we'll do to be able to get me to be A++, right? And so once these systems and help was in place in terms of making sure I was successful, I took the job. So I joined as financial controller in 2017. Within a year, I became CFO. And then within the next year, I became part owner.
A++. So that's a
very, very abridged version of my past. But it's been incredible along the ways, because you know I've looked for ways. I'm very passionate about service, so even when I was an employee, I looked for ways to give back. Now as a firm leader, I still look for ways to give back within the industry and beyond.
Thank you, Jessica. I would love to hear your story, because I mean everyone's so unique and no two career paths are the same. So Jessica, let's hear yours.
Yeah, mine's a little bit more traditional. So I grew up in Florida. I graduated from the Ringling School of Art and Design in Sarasota, Florida. Amazing experience. Love that school. Cannot say enough good things about it. I moved to New York 22 years ago for an internship at Herman Miller, the furniture manufacturer, now Miller Knoll. And I worked there for 2.5 years. They hired me on. I worked there and I helped them develop a department that did in-house space planning, rendering, and design, you know, from the furniture perspective of systems. So I learned a lot about how to specify furniture. And also, I think even more importantly, I became involved in IIDA from, you know, a very young age, right out of school. I had been involved in school, and then I became involved professionally. And then I moved to Conant Architects, which was a 12-person architectural firm. I also met Christian Giordano, our president at Conant Architects. It's all related. Mm-hmm. We worked together there and had stayed in touch ever since. And at Conant, I learned a little bit about everything. Because it's a 12-person firm, you have to do everything. So that was a great education. Then I went to Nelson, and I really, I think, honed my skills about learning how to specify, create really good construction documents. And at that point, I had a client who had followed me from Conant, and I really learned about account management and how to keep a client happy and build up a client relationship. I also simultaneously became president of IIDA New York. I was the youngest president at the time, and it was right in the middle of a recession, which was extremely difficult, but we conquered. We put on more events than we had ever put on. We put on 53 events that year, which I'm extremely proud of to this day after going through, you know, that recession and money being very scarce and just pulling our community together during that. And I think what I learned the most about that is how to navigate political situations. Mm-hmm. And then also I found my voice, and I became extremely comfortable with my voice, because you have to, you're thrown into a million situations that you don't know how to deal with. So you learn very quickly how to deal with them and you find your voice. Then I went to Spectre Group, where I was design director. Here I really started to bolster my skills about completely custom, very high-end design. I also, then transitioned to HLW and learned a lot about how to design specifically for tech clients. So I have a lot of both very high-end custom design and tech clients in my portfolio. another short stint at Spectre Group. And I think, you know, the most important thing about this time was that I transitioned into more of an executive leadership role and helping to run the firm. So that helped me to gain that perspective of leadership and also kind of opened me up to, okay, I really want to push forward to my next step and I want to own part of a firm and I want to find, you know, my next career path. And then also after 6 years of fertility at that point, we adopted our beautiful daughter, Trace. And I think that's a huge part of my story is that going through that journey while also being a professional woman. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's an open adoption. We were with her from the second she was born and she is a sassy, beautiful little 6-year-old girl now. So I've had an amazing journey with that. And then Christian gave me a call and I joined Mancini. I joined as a principal to oversee the interior design department. Very quickly became a part owner of the firm within a year and a half. And today I oversee, you know, workplace strategy, space planning and design. And our goal is to continually push design forward, to mentor and to build upon the great design that we're doing with many of our clients and to push our firm into other regions.
Oh, that's fantastic. You both, those stories are beautiful and great and so unique. Is Malala, is there something that you would tell your 20-year-old self now knowing where you are today?
You know, this is a question I think about. And I remember, I think I would tell my 20-year-old self two things. One is the tunnel vision. I think when you're 20, you're looking around, you're looking at your peers, you're seeing everyone like have like really clear ideas about what they, at least at that point in time, wanted to do. So a lot of my peers then in New York City were ending up in financial services. So they were at the Lehman's and the Goldman's and the, you know, like you could clearly define what their role was. And here I was as a junior project accountant at an architecture firm. I couldn't even tell you what I was doing then. And so I think I would just tell, but I was very excited and very grateful to have the opportunity. You know, it gave me some sense of like direction. So I'll tell my 20-year-old self, don't look at anyone, just focus on your own path. And I think I would also tell her, be ready for the ride. You know, like there's no way I would have imagined being a chief financial officer one, just because again, you know, I moved from a different country here. I didn't even think that this was possible. Then to top that off, to be able to own part of such a rich legacy firm, mind blowing, right? And so I would tell her, just be ready for the ride, good things coming ahead.
That's awesome. Jessica?
I would say don't be afraid to try new things, to embrace new things. You know, I've always been someone who asks why, but it took me a little while to understand that it's okay to ask why in professional situations. And so continue to stay curious and ask why, because that will help you to broaden your horizons and to push your boundaries and to open up everyone's eyes around you as well. And then I think the other thing that has really started to ring much more and more true to me, and that I hear from my clients all the time, is stay honest. Always stay honest about everything. Sometimes honesty is hard. Sometimes being honest is admitting that you messed something up and you have to take ownership of that, but it's okay. Stay honest, be true, be honest with your clients, and you'll work through it together. The thing that they will remember all the time is how you solve the situation. And I think, you know, your younger self is afraid of that.
Right.
But as you grow and learn in your career, honestly, I think that's the most important thing that I've learned and what I would want to tell everyone.
Yeah, that's great.
Mary, if I could just think that I think that is so true, because, you know, having young daughters or young kids, you notice that a lot of the reason why you're not honest is that in your formative years, maybe in class, you raised up your hand, you asked a question and you were sort of shut down, or your peers kind of laughed at you. And then I feel like that's where that shell starts to form, like, oh, I can't really speak up, or I can't really like ask a question because I'm afraid of like not sounding polished, or, you know, or not giving the right answer. And so I think that's such an important point to make. So thank you, Jessica, for mentioning that, because you notice, well, we see it sometimes in our employees that people are kind of like holding back from sharing their thoughts and opinions. No, share it. That's how you learn. And that's how you're going to be able to grow.
Yeah, that's so important. Let's talk about career resilience, because I don't know, this is something that I'm really passionate about, you know, and I use it in the context of one's ability to adjust and adapt to career changes that occur and taking charge of your own career path and continually developing new skills. How have you both continued to have that fire in you and set stretch goals and forge forward? Jessica, I'll start with you on that one.
I think it kind of goes back to what I said earlier. You know, I'm one, I'm always looking for the next thing. Two, I'm always questioning everything. So in being just a curious person by nature, I think that continually leads me to the next step and the next goal. And I'm always looking to grow and learn and embrace new things and stay up on technology. I want to learn from every situation I'm in and make it better so that the next time I'm in that situation, you know, there's an even better outcome. I've learned more. I've grown more. And so I think it really kind of goes back to all the things that I was saying before, is just continually trying to push, find new goals, embrace change and learning.
Great.
Yeah. And for me, I think I've now lived through two, I think my career, I've lived through two big global issues, right? One, the financial crisis of 2008, and then now the global pandemic. And part of the things that, you know, I did then and now is, one, look for opportunities, right? Like, what are the opportunities that are available in this sort of like really, really tough situation, right? And what are the opportunities for me to grow? Similar to Jessica, how can I step out rather than shrinking back? Am I stepping forward? Am I showing myself as a valuable member of the team? So back then, I'll give a perfect example, you know, with this 2008 financial crisis, unfortunately, you know, two people who were ahead of me lost their jobs. I say maybe it's also because I was really cheap. That's why I was still kept then. But I could have easily, like, just heads down, focused on the task that was given to me. But one of the things that I did was step up and then, you know, really lean into that bold side of me. I went to have a conversation with the CFO there saying, listen, I believe I can do their jobs. I can do the task. Please teach me. Please invest in me. And he took a chance on me. And so a lot of my knowledge, a lot of the things that I do now, the way in which I think about problems and financial you know, things that I'm solving, goes back to that time, goes back to everything that I learned there. Mm-hmm. And so even now, similar, you know, with the pandemic, it's like looking for opportunities to see that light at the end of the tunnel, right? Like, what is this first step that I need to take? What opportunity is there for me to guide and lead our, you know, our firm, our people through this time? And so for me, that's when I think about career resilience, I think about that, like, find opportunities, one, to maybe, one, invest in yourself and keep growing and learning, two, to give back to other people too, right? Like, that's how you yourself will hone the skills that you're trying to improve on. So lift others up as you're making your way through your career path, right? Keep on lifting people up, keep on giving back. As you learn something, give back to others, and you'll see your career grow in leaps and bounds.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Let's switch. Jessica, I'd love to, if you can share any like fun projects from the design side. I can barely draw stick figures, but I love home design. I love design. It just, so I'm eager to hear about some fun designs.
Oh, I have so many. there's a few that come to mind, though, that I think have been cemented in my brain for one reason or another. So I did a project for Roxa, which at the time was the largest women-owned advertising agency in the States. And not only was it a really cool design, but I think the reason that it was a really cool design was because we had this amazing team of women that worked so closely together to curate that vision and make that vision become a reality. And there was such a positive atmosphere, a positive and uplifting atmosphere in the room at all times during that. So that's always stood out to me as a great project. We do a lot of work with Pernod Ricard. I've done work with Pernod Ricard for 13 years, I think now, through a couple of different firms. That also is a relationship with a woman at Pernod that we have continued to bolster each other's careers for a very, very long time. And we've done some amazing projects with Pernod. And the thing that I love about that is the initial project that I did, I learned so much and I helped evolve the company through their workspace and I helped move them towards their future vision and goals. And then, you know, every 2 to 5 years, they would call me back in and we would do something else. We would do an office for another location. We would adapt the current office because the company is always evolving and their workplace and their design evolves with them. So that for me has just been kind of a magical relationship to be able to evolve with a client, not only evolve the design because the design's been vastly different every time, but to be able to be there as part of that journey with them has been really great. Also, Boca Ria, we work a lot with Boca Ria. And I think that Boca Ria is very unique in that the owner, Jan, is design is truly the driver for everything that Jan does. And that is very unique, I think, in not only in restaurants, but also just in the vision of the way that you're approaching a project from the client side. Design is always the answer with Jan, and we always go back to it, you know, and we figure out the right way to approach it. And it's, you know, before budget, it's before schedule, it's before everything else. It's always about the design. So that's just a great relationship to have, and it's fun and it's great to watch it evolve and kind of gain legs. And then the last one I would mention is Omnicom. We do a lot of work with Omnicom. We work with a lot of they're an umbrella company that owns a lot of advertising marketing agencies. And we do a lot of work with their agencies. And so those are really fun projects because they're each so vastly different. And then we also did the headquarters for Omnicom, which was a very high-end, you know, really beautiful, minimal design that I think elevated their headquarters experience and created a space for each of their agencies to come use as well. And that was just a great process to go through after working with each of the specific agencies to be able to do the headquarters as well. So I think those are some of my favorites, and there's so many more that I could list if we had more time.
I love it because no 2 days would be the same.
Yeah, it's true.
But Lila, you have a lot going on outside of work, and and you said early on in this conversation how your company endorses and encourages you to be passionate and share your passion projects. So can you tell us about your passion projects?
Yes. So I have several, but we'll talk about first in no favorite order. Let me just say that. But first, we'll talk about my nonprofit, which is called She Builds Lives. So She Builds Lives is a nonprofit I started 9 years ago, and we focus on improving the quality of education for children living in low-income communities in Nigeria. So I've always been super passionate about education, especially having, you know, gone to school in Nigeria and then moving to the States, now having children, seeing what my kids are exposed to here, and just constantly thinking about the gap, you know, between where our children are here and the children back home, even compared to the folks who are from, you know, maybe a more privileged background. And so with the nonprofit, it actually started off first with me crocheting hats that I used to donate to like NICUs and like, you know, kids with cancer here. And then in essence, I started thinking about like, how can I crochet a scarf, sell it, and then use this funds to help children in these communities. And so again, over the years, it evolved where now I don't have as much time to use my hands to crochet, but I do have connections and network and people that, you know, relationships that I've formed over the years that help, you know, when it comes to fundraising for the different projects that we're doing there. And so we have a school in Makoko, Nigeria, Lagos, Nigeria. So the school is in a community that is completely on water. It's all floating. And we have 217 children that attend our school with many more. It's completely free. So that's my adopted school in Lagos. I have another project that we're currently working on in Abuja, Nigeria. So we have something called an internally displaced people's camp. This is people who are displaced from their homes within the country, but they've had to move because of unrest, you know, civil unrest that's happening in their state. And so there are children there who have to go to school, who have to learn, who's investing in them, who is thinking about them. And so we're working in our camp right now to build our, what we call our tutored learning center, which is a space that the children living in the camp can come in all year round to get educational help. And so like that's the work that I do a lot through the nonprofit. It is so rewarding. A lot of the projects that I've done over the years, I actually have not been there, but I have developed relationships with other nonprofits who are on ground, who help to oversee, you know, the deployment of any projects that we come up. So that's She Builds Lang. When I became chief financial officer, I started She Builds Waves, which is essentially a women's empowerment, you know, platform collective of it first started with women within the industry. And then, of course, now it has grown because everyone needs that support and needs the resources that we provide through the platform. But She Builds Waves essentially was started thinking about how do we find fulfillment in our careers beyond, you know, the technical part of our jobs, right? Yes, we know how to do our jobs well, but how do we begin to think about everything else that affects how we show up, right? So how do you define success? What is value to you? How do you collaborate with other women across departments, right? So I'm in a department that is not the primary within the industry, but there are women who have made, you know, their homes within this industry. And so how do we make sure that they're supported as they're moving along their career path? And so that was the whole idea behind She Builds Waves. We put out a lot of content to help you on your career journey on social. And then I have She Builds Money. I think, I don't know if you mentioned that, but She Builds Money, again, my whole philosophy, I think it's my whole ethos, right, of how I live my life, but constantly thinking about how can I make it easier for the next person.
Yeah.
So She Builds Money, I started as a way, it was actually birthed during COVID, right? Me being a finance person, I started thinking a lot about small architecture firms and like, how are they surviving through this time, right? Do they have the right financial knowledge to run their businesses successfully? And what information can I put out there in language they understand, right? Not every business leader is sitting there thinking about accounts receivables and like my balance sheet. But yeah, as a small business owner, you're like, do I have enough money to like make it through this month, right? And so She Builds Money is a platform that I use to put out resources, financial knowledge, financial information about running your small business, making sure that you run it successfully. And then the last, Reach Nigeria, that is a connector hub between people and nonprofits in Nigeria. What I found out over the years was that people want to give back, but they don't necessarily know how to do it, or, you know, like, how do I find this nonprofit in my home state that I want to give back to? And so we amplify the work of a lot of the nonprofits back home. We share volunteer opportunities for you know, people to connect with. Either they give back through time if they have time to volunteer, or you give money, you know, but you essentially connect with the organizations, their founders, and other volunteers. I'm fortunate now, like, I'm not in the day-to-day. I know that that's always the next question. How do you do it all? You delegate and you ask for help. So I have someone I work with that helps reach out to the organizations to make sure that we're sharing, you know, the right opportunities for people to connect with.
Well, I love it. And I applaud you. So many people talk about wanting to give back, but you're giving back and you're doing and creating these opportunities. So, and I don't want to skip without talking about your book.
Yeah.
Because I'm an aspiring author, but your book is called Build Boldly, Chart Your Unique Career Path and Lead with Courage. Yeah. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So, again, clearly, I love the word build. It's an homage to the industry that that has given me this rich career that I have right now. But, you know, last year, 2021, I never had plans to write a book. I was like, I'll just keep doing the things that I'm doing and giving back. But I had a really honest conversation with somebody at the start of the year. And, you know, just speaking about my career, talking through how we're leading at Mancini, talking through the different decisions that I made that caused exponential growth for me in my career path. Essentially, there was a charge that was put to me that said, I don't mean to put any pressure on you, but this needs to be in a book. There are individuals who need to read about your career journey so far, the decisions that you made. And there are also organization leaders who need to learn about how you're leading boldly so that they can nurture and retain their people, so that they can they're not afraid to lead boldly. They're not afraid to lead their own way, not what they've seen, but like, what is my leadership style? How do I want my people to feel when they're interacting with me? And so essentially that is the, idea behind Build Boldly, which is I really wrote it to ignite between, you know, in people and in leaders, you know, the mindset of I need to take courageous, bold action and really chart my own playbook. And then chart my own career playbook for success, because once you're in the driver's seat, once you realize that it is truly unique to you, you're already successful, regardless of what happens, right? You're already on the path to success. And so, yeah, that is why I wrote Build Boldly. I think one of the important things that I would share with that is, you know, some folks would be like, well, you could have waited till the end of your career. And I'm like, no, why not now?
Right.
Right. Like, that was the fear I had. Oh, I haven't done enough. No, like, there are people who need to learn and read about your journey as it's unfolding. Right. And I think there's a lot to be learned from, a lot to be said. There's much more to write. I think that's how I live off the book. Right. That there's like, who knows what the next 15 years is going to bring. But I'm really excited. And I hope that when people pick up the book, they do feel that call, right? That you're not just inspired, but you're actually moved to action. You're moved to like going there and saying, okay, this is what I want to see accomplished in the rest of 2022, going on 23, and actually put steps into making it happen.
You two both resonate so closely to my values. And this is a question that I ask everyone on the show. So Jessica, I'm going to ask you, what does to be bolder mean to you?
I think it is using your voice. Find your voice, use it, own your place in the room, and not only your own voice, but encourage other voices as well. And through your voice, mentor and raise other people up. Just like Bola's doing.
That's fabulous. All right, Bola.
Yeah. So, I mean, to me, I've kind of written a book using the word. So clearly, clearly, I love being bold. So to be bolder to me means to be true to you, you know, being yourself. So I have the bold framework, and the B is be yourself. I think when you truly lean into yourself in your career, in your personal life, professionally, you know, there's no other radical act. Like there's no other way you can be bold except being true to you. So just make sure you're staying true to yourself.
Yeah, I would add to that too. You know, there's something that I learned a lot in the last 5 to 10 years of my career is just be authentic, you know, very true to what you're saying, Bola. Be authentic. It's okay to be a woman. It's okay to be a mother. It's okay to embrace all of that, what that means professionally, personally, you know, growing up in a career that is very male dominated for many years, those facets of yourself, you know, you don't talk about them. They're hidden.
Right.
And I think now we're in such an amazing age for all of our careers because we are embracing women, we're building up women, and we are being authentic to our true selves and what it means to be a woman. And it's created such an amazing atmosphere, I think, for growth for all of us to be our true authentic selves.
Jessica, what advice do you give women who struggle to find what their voice is?
Do a lot of soul searching. We talk a lot about that on our team. You know, I went through that myself. I'm a real believer in doing a lot of soul searching and creating, you know, your pro and con list and envisioning yourself 5 minutes from now, 5 years from now, you know, 15 years from now. What does your career look like? What does your life look like personally and professionally? what are the goals that you want to accomplish? So it's a lot of kind of digging into yourself and understanding yourself and understanding what your future goals are. And then also getting comfortable with what your strengths and weaknesses are and owning that and being honest about that. You know, I think in learning how to be honest about what your strengths and weaknesses are, that will allow you to really build upon and grow because you're able to bolster them. You're able to embrace them and bolster them.
Yeah, I'm such a fan of that because I think so many good qualities that we as women have, we discount because they come naturally to us instead of enhancing them or leveraging them as a superpower or a strength of ours. Mm-hmm. So I can't thank you both enough for being on the show. What is the best way for people to connect with you, not only for your company, but you individually to learn more?
Sure. So for me, you can connect with me on LinkedIn, my name at Bolanlee Williams Ollie. I also have my personal website, which is www.bolanleewo.com. I'm sure Meryl will share.
I will.
And on Instagram, if you want to see my cute little kids and all those theme parties I throw at Bolanlee_HQ. That's where all the fun stuff is.
Awesome.
And for me, Jessica Mann Amato on LinkedIn, and then at Jessica Mann hyphen Amato on Instagram as well, always hyphenated. And then, of course, through our website, a lot of things get posted on our website as well at www.mancini-duffy.com.
Fantastic. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you. This was so good.
Thanks for listening to the episode today. It was really fun chatting with my guest. If you liked our show, please like it and share it with your friends. If you want to learn what we're up to, please go check out our website at 2bboulder.com. That's the number 2, little b, boulder.com.